We're going to start this half hour with some of the ethical issues that journalists found themselves facing last Thursday following the apparent suicide of Missouri State Auditor Tom Schweik. He died in his Clayton home last Thursday of what police are calling a self-inflicted gunshot wound, moments after leaving this voicemail for St. Louis Post-Dispatch editorial page editor Tony Messenger.
Tony, it's a Tom Schweik calling. You can have a reporter here at my house at 2:30. I'm willing to speak to both Post-Dispatch and to the AP only about this matter. I would give a brief prepared statement, which we would videotape, and then can answer questions from your reporter. This is only for you two, and I hope you'll not make it known that I'm doing this. But give me a call and let me know if you can have somebody here at 2:30. To me, this is more of a religion story than a politics story, but it's your choice on who the reporter is. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Messenger explained in a note to readers that the two men had had a few conversations in the days prior, talking about rumors that Schweik believed state GOP chair John Hancock was spreading about his faith. I don't so much want to talk about what happened in the past week, but the two dilemmas that Schweik's suicide presented for the journalists covering it. Let's start with that decision that Tony Messenger made to share that voicemail, to publish it, to hand it out to other media, and to release the details of these conversations the two men had had previously.
Is the greatest conceit that we have in the media that we're not part of the story? Tony Messenger was part of that story, and if it were something else, if he had called someone else, left another voicemail on a non-media machine, then the Post-Dispatch would be doggedly looking to obtain that voicemail. I think that we should applaud Tony for being transparent.
No, I agree. And he said, at least in his writing about it, that he thought Schweik would have wanted it that way for him to disclose the information. Whether or not that's a good enough excuse, I don't know. But I did think it provided some nuance and some understanding of the story that we wouldn't have had otherwise, since Tony was such a key to it.
Talk for a minute about that idea. There's kind of an expectation out there that journalists protect sources, that oftentimes we see different reporters, we've even talked about it with folks at the New York Times, James Risen right now, fighting to keep their sources and their information private, even being willing to go to prison for that. It all changes when that source isn't alive anymore.
I think that that's absolutely true, but I also think that this is different than protecting a source who's provided you information where there may be some sort of whopper in that information, some sort of bomb that's going to be dropped, like the Pentagon Papers or, you know, Edward Snowden. Mm-hmm. I think that here what you're seeing is there's no obligation because Mr. Schweik has passed, but also because there's not really any confidential information here. There's no need to protect that source at this point.
And Schweik is the story, so it seems to me that that's relevant information that should be shared.
Now, I know one of the questions that was posed to me by non-journalists was this confusion that came from the fact the story was even covered, because they don't often see or hear the covering of suicides. And there's some nuance here that would need to be explained. Let's share that idea with why this is a story when so many other suicides aren't.
Normally, we won't report a suicide unless certain very specific conditions are met. Mm-hmm. Is the person a public figure?
In this case, yes.
Or they thrust themselves into the public limelight by their behavior. They maybe committed suicide in a public space. They caused some kind of public, you know, reaction or caused a problem for the public in doing so. And, you know, this story obviously met those conditions. But we typically wouldn't report a suicide otherwise because of the worries about copycats and encouraging other people to do the same thing to get their 15 minutes of fame.
I think that Mike brings up great points. The fact that he was a public figure is the dominant part of why we do this. I don't think if it were anyone else in a less public role, we would be covering this.
I have to say, though, I think there's one other sort of, I don't know if it rises to the level of ethics, but certainly professional practice when it came to the coverage of the story. And that was either in the news coverage or especially in the editorial columns, this sort of attempt by some folks to try to simplify the cause for this behavior. I mean, he committed suicide. He committed it after talking about the fact that he felt that an opponent was starting a whisper campaign that he was Jewish, or that there was a really nasty attack ad that was on the radio about him. And then a lot of media sort of just said, well, one thing caused the other. If you look at the Post-Dispatch, they read an editorial that said the auditor might have pulled the trigger, but the bullies who were campaigning against him held the gun to his head. Suicide just isn't that simple. I mean, I really thought it would be useful for news organizations to do some stories about just what we do know and don't know about what causes suicide. I mean, I looked up, for example, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention and what they say about it. And they said some suicides appear to be impulsive or spur of the moment or may follow a very upsetting event like this one. Yeah. But while we all go through painful experiences, suicide is not a normal response, and only a small percentage of people react by taking their lives. Suicide almost always results from the pain and desperation of mental illness. So just to be fair, whether or not we wanted to decry how awful politics has become, to try to draw a straight line cause and effect between one and the other, I think the media shouldn't do that.
I would agree. I think we do have a media culture, though, that at this point looks to simplify complex fractions down to their very most simple. And
to do that as quickly as possible to then wrap up, move on, as opposed to provide depth and context in reporting.
Right. Okay. And, you know, I do think there is something to be said for how the public responds, you know, favorably or not to some of the attack ads and the whisper campaigns and all this kind of stuff. One of the ads that ran was this basically a parody of House of Cards, the Netflix series where the congressman who commits murder, really commits murder, becomes a president of the United States. And they used...
Not just once.
They used his voice or a parody of his voice to make fun of Schweik and how he'd be run over by the Democratic candidate. Well, you know, a lot of people actually like that show. We're waiting for House of Cards to come out here this past week because... admit it or not, we kind of believe that that's the way politics really works, and that's how effective politics gets done, by the people who are ruthless enough to do whatever it takes. The public has some responsibility here.
I think that, yes, because we don't stand up and argue. But when former Senator Danforth, who was the auditor's mentor, stands up and says, essentially, he may have pulled the trigger, but you all got him to that point, and then we reject that notion because we said, well, we didn't do that. Who are we to be blamed for it?
Well, there's a difference between saying one thing caused another. Suicide is very complicated, but there's nothing wrong with saying this is an example of just how low our politics has become. As long as we can separate those two arguments, I think that latter argument is one we should make as often as we can.